CliffCentral.com.
Just the way I wanted to start this show, I think with life, love in the air. I'm Phumi Mashego and you listening to Woman. How romantic is that song? Share the shelter of my single bed. I'm just like, Bob Marley. One of my favorite love songs. And definitely good way to get into the last stretch towards Valentine's Day, right? And Valentine's Day, there's love in the air, there's hearts everywhere, there's red roses, people are going insane about it. And I actually thought today, I'm going to take, is it a cynical view? Actually, no, it's a woman's perspective on Valentine's Day. And more importantly, it's the safe, smart woman's perspective on Valentine's Day. A little bit later in the show, I'm going to be talking to one of the counselors from the Rape Crisis Center, and we're going to be talking about date rape. You haven't heard that one in a while. People aren't talking about that for a long time. But also, today I'm introducing a new feature because I've been seeing these headlines every day and I'm like, somebody has got to talk about these things. So today I'm introducing a new feature, and every week going forward, at least for the rest of the year, because I foresee this for the rest of the year being like a big thing in the papers. Women in the news, women making news, and today's one is particularly irritating for me because everywhere I drove, every single one of the local newspapers, Sowetan, The Star, the Independent newspaper group, even on IOL, I checked it out, they're running with the same lead. Times Live are running with the same lead. How absolutely disgusting is this headline today? I didn't even see the name earlier, but quoting, women are too weak to lead. The Sowetan's got a big picture of Madam Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma, who has now come back into the country now that her tenure as AU chair has ended. She's back in the country and she is full force running for the ANC presidency. And everywhere she is going at the moment, everybody, and this is the irritating thing for me, girls, is everywhere, everybody is talking about she's unfit to lead because she's a woman. She's unfit to lead because she's Jacob Zuma's wife. She's unfit to lead, according to this article in particular, because, quote unquote, women are weak and sensitive, and this country is a mess, and a woman would never be able to lead us out of this mess. This is what the Xhosa King, Mpendulo Zwelonke Sigcawu, said yesterday at an event where he was actually hosting her. So he was hosting this woman, and then this is how he like responds to the fact that she actually is out there campaigning. Another article that was very interesting for me this week that I picked up yesterday in the Sowetan, again, Sowetan Live. Well done to the Sowetan on the kind of reporting that they've got out there. Even though they're sensationalizing it, I'd like to see headlines that are a little bit more, you know, balanced. Because this headline says, I'm intersex, says Miss Sundowns. And it is about the most beautiful Sharon Rose Kumalo, who is the newly crowned Miss Sundowns. And she has come out as saying, yes, she is intersex, and she is okay with that. I loved this article. It's all about how when she was 21 years old, she discovered that actually what was wrong with her, not having her periods over when she became a teenager, was that she actually didn't have a uterus. But this is the girl that she is, and this is the life that she's living. And I'm bravo to you, madam, for not giving in and not staying to the traditional stereotypes of what intersex women can and cannot do. What was really lovely about this article, again, is when I went on at the bottom of the article, they had a gender, sexual orientation and gender identity advocacy senior administrator come on and actually define the term intersex, because I can imagine there's a lot of people, until I had Jabu Pereira on the show, shout out to my friend at iranti.org, until I had him on the show, I also didn't quite understand what it is. A couple of years ago, when the Caster Semenya boo-ha-ha was all over the place, I didn't quite understand what that was about. And there is a really lovely explanation at the end here that explains that intersex is a person who does not fall medically into the normative standards. So what you and I and everybody else in society deem to be a male person or a female person, specifically with regards to the genitalia, chromosomes, or even their hormones. And then the term that everybody likes to use, which is actually a derogatory term and is not meant for humans, hermaphrodite, an outdated and offensive term previously and incorrectly used to refer to intersex person. In modern use, it refers to plants and animals, typically with both male and female sex characteristics. So things like, I don't even quite remember what that would be. And then transgender, something that has become big out there thanks to Caitlyn Jenner. We have seen a person who does not particularly or wholly identify with their gender assigned at birth. Transgender is an umbrella term that includes all those who are not cisgender, the opposite of transgender. So that's the story. Those are some of the headlines. Really love the fact that on Huffington Post South Africa, who are not as advanced because they're new. Shout out to my girl for real out there, who's the editor of Huffington Post South Africa. They have a lot of articles, but also leading with the story. Well, leading with Sona, but also somewhere down there, they've got the story about Nkosazana Zuma and how derogatory that Xhosa chief was. And another story that's kind of bubbling under here is the story of the black on black and girl on girl, or is that woman to woman, violence that we are seeing with the previous public protector and the current public protector, Ms. Thuli Madonsela and Ms. Mkhwebana. I'm just like, how? Girls, can't we all just get along and do the job at hand? But there are quite a lot of women-focused stories on Huffington Post. Unlike the International Huffington, they don't have a Huffington Post women just yet. Hint, hint, I hope you put it out there. On Huffington Post, you can find lots of stories that will interest you as a woman, that will empower you and also will give you a little bit of some things to think about. While I get my guest on the show, a song that created a lot of hoo-ha, lots of hoo-ha when it first came out, while I get my guest on the line who's coming to us all the way from Cape Town, is Robin Thicke, Blurred Lines. The way you grab me, must wanna get nasty.
Keeping it real on CliffCentral.com.
How much I love to hate that song, right? It's such a head banger. But when that song came out, there was all the talk about what is he actually saying here? Robin Thicke at Blurred Lines, which I think is the perfect way to introduce our next guest, Cherie Lee, who's a counselor at Rape Crisis Center in Cape Town, all the way in Cape Town. Thanks for coming on the line with me, Cherie Lee.
Thank you, Pumi. Thanks for inviting me.
So I start with that song because I think the one thing about Valentine's for me is it creates so much expectations and there's so much like flirting and fun and and all the love that's in the air and all the blurred lines that actually come with it. One of the hidden dangers, or maybe not even so hidden danger, that a lot of women kind of push to the back of their heads is the very real issue of date rape. And rape in general, but date rape in particular, I think is one of the things that all women are in danger of at this time of the year. And so I'm very grateful that you came to chat with us.
Oh, no, it's an absolute pleasure. Yes.
And I was saying to you earlier that one of the things that I found quite disconcerting is I had to go all the way down to Cape Town because I called a couple of places. I searched on the internet. I called a couple of places up here in Joburg. I emailed some people. I didn't get any responses. I didn't get any answers. And isn't that one of the things that's so indicative of rape? Is it's so widely spread but so unspoken about.
Well, resources are scarce, yes, and rape is an issue that has become more highlighted, and we thank the media for profiling, or should I say, showing up the issues around rape. It's such an important issue as well, and it's such a, yeah, it has such a profound impact on survivors. It really does.
And Cheryl Lee, earlier I was just looking at some of the headlines that are in all the national newspapers today, and the big one that's almost everyone is leading with is the Xhosa king who's actually said to Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma to her face yesterday that women are too weak to lead. Which I know, right? Like it was
language.
It was quite shocking, and why for me it was such an important thing to talk about today, not just to highlight that even in 2017 we live with men who have that kind of thinking, but also in the context of our conversation, one of the things that a lot of people misconstrue rape as being a crime of passion, as it being. Is that actually rape, all rape, whether it's date rape, whether it is forced by complete strangers, is actually about power. It's about power play.
Yes, absolutely. And I mean, men are pretty powerful in South African society still today. Patriarchy is still quite alive, and the social norms that perpetuate rape, and especially around issues of consent, are still very much there. The idea that that men can kind of do what they do is not a new one. It's something that we're still trying to shift. And I make a sweeping statement here. It's quite a generalization when I talk generally about men in,
Yes, of course. I mean, we do recognize here at Womandla that not all men are created equal. Nor are they anywhere near as equal and awesome as women. But I think the one thing is that overwhelmingly, even though men can also be sexually assaulted, the one thing that is overwhelming is that the numbers are very skewed towards women being particularly vulnerable to this kind of attack.
Yes, absolutely. And I just
wanted to chat, in your experience working with survivors of any kind of sexual assault, some of the things that are big warning signs that girls should look out for to say when they are in contact, especially with someone that you know, because I think the intimacy of date rape actually skews it a little bit. This is not a man you've never met, you don't know, who is simply rude and horrendous and violating you. This is somebody that you've brought into close proximity to you and into your confidence. So what are some of the big warning signs that girls should look out for to say, I need to be a little bit more careful with this one?
And I can understand why people ask this question about how can I keep myself safe? How can I prevent being, in a situation where I might be sexually assaulted or raped? But actually, perhaps we can think about it a little differently, because the reality is there aren't always warning signs that we can read so easily. And if we can think about it a little differently in terms of, let's speak to men about not treating women like they do. Because the way they treat women is very damaging. It has sometimes, it often can have an impact on how she might function within her family, in her work domain, whether she's able to actually even move out of her house. So healing from rape, even attempted rape, is a big thing. You spoke earlier in terms of a very important sort of thinking around rape, is that idea of, well, I was out on a date, in some way I was complicit, but that's not the case. People consent to a date, but they don't consent to be raped. The issue of consent is very important, and how do men navigate that relationship so they can understand that what they might be potentially doing is damaging?
And how do we start those conversations? How do we start those conversations in our relationships with men? So even as this is a new person I've been flirting with, or I really like this guy, so how do we start the conversations around boundaries and consent?
I think that's really an important question, and I don't know if there is a silver bullet to that, but I think, you know, generally if you think about society and how what the narratives are in society around how we talk about gender, what are men supposed to be? You know, they're supposed to be these big, strong, manly men. And what are women supposed to be? How do we conceive or put men and women in the different boxes? And how do we talk about women in particular? What is the language or the narratives that we use around women? And how do, you know, the other thing is I think we in the communities need to challenge. We need to challenge rape culture, basically, and speak up against it.
Rape culture. This is a word that, for me, was a particularly new word in the past couple of years. It's become such a very familiar word that's been so used. And, you know, sometimes I'm not even quite sure what that word really means.
Well, I think it kind of speaks to an attitude or an assumed social norm, you know, a social norm that perpetuates rape or the idea that women are objects rather than individuals or persons and that they have rights and they have rights to safety and security themselves. And those sort of social norms are something that we learn very early on as children. We live in a family who perhaps speak in a specific way around issues on gender and the roles that, and responsibilities inherent in that and the narratives around that. How we speak about gender, I think, and how, you know, the attitudes we have around it are seriously important because the impact on a survivor can be, as I said earlier, potentially profound. I think it's important that we tackle that head on, you know, and the other thing is that we often, in our kind of social norms, we are blaming survivors. We are saying she shouldn't have actually walked down that street wearing that dress or she shouldn't have been out late at night. And is that really fair? I don't think it's fair that we're blaming survivors, that victim blaming attitude silences people and doesn't allow them to have a voice and come out and speak up and also not access treatment that they so deserve. First of all, the medical treatment and then counseling and help is vital during this time period.
Yeah, because people do keep it to themselves. And just speaking of surviving an attack of this nature, there's so many, everybody's got advice. To say, you must do this, you mustn't do that, you can't do this, you can't do that. There's so many things out there. If one should ever find themselves in the incredibly unfortunate situation where you have been violated in any way, what are the five top things that you must do in order of appearance?
Okay, so seek help. You know, try and get to a safe place as early as possible. You know, you might be in a place where you're not able to make a decision right there and then, but the people that you lean on, also be aware not to impose your own ideas on a survivor because she needs to kind of take control of her life and her body is part of that. So saying that she must do this and she must do that is not actually really helpful, but showing her what her choices are in that process are helpful and allowing her to go at her own pace. So critically speaking, if someone has been raped, they need to get help within 72 hours. You can't get
72 hours, that's 3 days.
It's within 3 days. And I know this is really hard, but trying to gain medical treatment as early as possible is key here because we say 72 hours, but actually the earlier you can get access to antiretroviral treatment, the better the prognosis is in preventing the contracting of HIV. And then in that, the other part of the medical treatment is getting antibiotics for STIs and the morning after pill. Now, the morning after pill and the antibiotics for STIs can be gotten later. I think the morning after pill, if I remember correctly, is within 5 days. The medical treatment, try not to bath, have a cup of tea or smoke or shower.
Even a cup of tea?
even a cup of tea, because the perpetrator may not have raped you vaginally or anally. He may have raped you orally.
Mm.
So that is one way of collecting forensic evidence. So the medical process is a different process to the forensic process. The forensic process is where the doctor will collect evidence that will support what your statement says about what has happened.
Mm.
So there's a lot for survivors to think about, you know, it really is. Do they want to press charges or don't they? Do they want medical help or don't they? And generally, survivors want medical help. That's the first thing they want to think about, because they want to keep themselves safe. And then after that, of course, calling our helpline. We've got a 24-hour helpline. In fact, we've got three.
Please give out those numbers for us.
Oh, I'd love to. Thank you. It's 021-447-9762. Then we have another two. That's 021-633-9229. And then 021-361-9085.
And these are all Cape Town numbers, but anybody can call these numbers.
Anybody nationally can call. If you just want to chat to a counselor, day or night, you don't even have to say where you are. If you just need to speak to someone, you just want to reach out, something's happened and you just want to try and make sense of it in a conversation, that's absolutely perfect. Call us. That's what we're there for.
Mm, wonderful. And yeah. So now you've had the... And where does the forensic collection of
evidence
get taken? Yes. Does this happen at the hospital? Do I have to go to a police station? So do I have to first go to the hospital and then go to the police station? Or does everything happen at the same time?
Well, there are centres around the country, not everywhere, obviously, and I know that there are quite a few in Gauteng, called Thuthuzela Care Centres.
Mm-hmm.
And those are one-stop centres. So a survivor, if they called our helpline and they told us where they were near, we could actually refer them to the right Thuthuzela Care Centre, and they could go straight there. They can't be turned away. It's a 24-hour service. And they will call the police out to the hospital and everything will get done there.
Oh, wow.
Rather than actually go from pillar to post. But sometimes a survivor lives closer to the police station and it is easier for her to go there. So when you go to the police station, try and take someone who, you know, you care about, who's going to support you through this, that is your advocate basically with you. And you tell the frontline person at the community service center that you'd like to report a rape. You don't have to say anything further. They will take you to a separate room and they will call the specialized unit out to take you off to the forensic facility as well.
Oh, fantastic. See, I didn't even know that about the system. Look, you know, it's such a thing. So for me, even as I was researching today's show, so many questions kept coming up. And one of the things that I became very acutely aware of is the fact that when you are a teenager, a lot of this kind of information is all over you because the expert, you know, but as you grow older, I don't know where it all gets sifted off, where suddenly people feel it's no longer relevant to you.
Well, you know, for me, I think that's so interesting because I suppose it speaks to how often we feel it's not going to happen to us. We're not going to get hijacked. We're not going to get raped. You know, it happens to other people. And when it does happen to us, you're right. We do sit in a situation where we don't know what to do. But that's what our helpline is there for as well. So if you want counseling, call the helpline. If you want to know what to do and what your options are, call the helpline and we'll help you think through it, you know?
And what are the options that a girl has? What are the real and tangible options, even before we go into the dearth of the criminal justice system?
Absolutely. So safety is key here, so that you can feel medically safe and psychologically safe. So getting to a safe space is the first critical thing, of course. But then also making decisions around your medical safety is also very important. So you don't need to go to, you don't have to report the rape in order to get the medical treatment from the forensic unit. I can't actually remember what the process is offhand, and now I'm feeling like you know, it's a bit like when you get lost for words. You can just statement that you don't want to report at this stage, but you do want to actually get the medical treatment. And this is provided free by the state, because actually the state takes rape cases very seriously. It is a crime against the state. You know, it's not just it is a personal issue. Obviously, the crime has happened on the person's body, and it feels, you know, survivors often feel highly contaminated. They feel dirty, and it's not the kind of dirty that you can easily wash off. But, it is a crime against the state. They take it very seriously, so the service is free. But survivors can go to their own doctors, of course, if that's what's going to make them feel more comfortable. Because, you know, it's hard to go and think about going to report something like this, or going to say, I was raped. It is hard to acknowledge that even at times. Because of that idea you referred to earlier around, well, we were on a date. So in a sense,
I was there and I agreed to be with this person alone.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. It was my own fault. And in fact, it's not your fault. It is the person that made the decision at that time that to not hear your call. It's their fault.
And Shirley, before I let you go, in terms of, so that's the physical aspect of it. And we know that, you know, the far-reaching consequences of this type of violation is that it is also incredibly psychological.
Definitely.
So, psychologically, how does a survivor begin to unravel what has happened and also just to begin the healing process so that they can live and move forward?
Yeah. Well, I can't emphasize enough how important it is for a survivor to be able to make that decision for herself, to decide when she is going to be ready to come for counseling. I also can't emphasize enough how important it is for those around her to get support as well. Because, you know, we often hear people who are supporting a survivor saying she should go and get counseling, or she should do this, or she should do that. And it's their own sense of helplessness. And one's sense of helplessness is a very visceral reaction to, you know, I couldn't stop this. I couldn't stop my daughter, my friend from being raped. Not that you can, you know, it's not your responsibility. What I'm trying to say is some of the psychological impact is that people can become quite depressed and sad, and they feel helpless, and they feel a sense of shame and guilt. They often find it difficult to parent their children, or feel suspicious of new relationships, and their trust in the world generally has been broken. And survivors have to learn how to trust themselves, first of all, and then how do you kind of engage and trust in others and see yourself in the world again? How can they function at work feeling like they are hypervigilant because they don't know whether the person that is coming in through the door is going to hurt them in some way? So, yeah, it can impact on a person on a very individual level, where she feels a disconnection from her body and herself, and a disconnection with others and in the work environment and or schooling environment.
And as a sister, mother, wife, friend, how can one, if you get to be the person that is the first port of call for somebody that has been violated, how can you best support a person that comes to you to disclose such a violation, and what do you have to do, and how do you support and advise without pushing your own agenda, which I think, you know, when somebody comes to me for advice, I know that my reaction is often from my perspective, and so I have my own agenda in everything that I put out there.
We all like that, don't we? We often want to give advice because it's the quick thing. I think one of the really painful things about listening to a survivor is that the story is painful, and witnessing someone that you care about very deeply experiencing that pain is really hard. But the hardest thing is just to be there and listen. You don't have to fix her. She can fix herself. Mm. She has the tools within her, and she will go at her own pace and trust that she knows what's right for her, even if you feel it's not right. She knows what's going to be okay for her during that time. Because when we try and fix and when we try and impose our will, it's not going to be taken on board necessarily. So try and figure it out with her. Try and collaborate with her what's going to be the best way forward.
And then lastly, just if, because we've been talking about girls, we've been talking about the perspective of a girl.
Yes.
If it is a guy on the other side, so they have been violated, they are feeling unsure. How does one navigate that? Because I can imagine that that's a whole other show on its own. But just very quickly, how to assist a guy that has been violated?
Believe him, like you would with all survivors. Believe him.
That is not what I expected. And as you said it was like a punch in my gut, because that's so true.
Oh, dear. Yeah. What were you expecting?
I don't know what I was expecting, but I think that just that statement is so empowering, because I can imagine that a lot of guys get disempowered because they're not believed.
Well, a serious deep of sense of shame as well, because it goes back to our ideas around masculinity and that men should be able to protect themselves. Well, that's not necessarily the case. Men often experience a really deep sense of shame, and it's an assault on their own sense of masculinity. So I think believing a man is critically important. Men can be raped.
Sure, Sherilee, a lot to think about. Thank you so much for coming on. And just the deep compassion that you have as well is incredibly, incredibly empowering. I hope that for the girls that are listening, for the guys that are listening, there's just before you say goodbye, those numbers again that people can get hold of. So rapecrisiscenter.org.za, right?
It's rapecrisis.org.za, and you can find us on Facebook as well. Then the numbers are 021-447-9762, and then the 021-633-9229, and then 021-361-9085. And if you phone that last number, you're more likely to speak to a closer-speaking counselor as well.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
And help is out there. Help is definitely out there.
Yes, it is. And we have a lot of information on our website. People are welcome to go and look on our website. I think on the homepage, if you scroll right down, there is a booklet that we give to all survivors who access any of our services. And it's called You and Rape, The Road to Recovery. Mm. And it's got very, very helpful information in there.
And it's really nice to know that this is taken so seriously by the state that it is actually a crime against the state. So your community center, your community service center at the police station, they're specialized police who will take your statement. Yes. You do not have to give your statement to anybody whom you feel uncomfortable with. At the government hospitals, there are rape kits there as well. Because I'd read all about this with the rape kits. And
yes. The police bring the rape kit. The specialized unit bring the rape kit to the hospital with them.
So the help is available, and there is absolutely no reason to feel shame. And just because you took the flowers, just because you took the chocolate, just because you said yes to the date, doesn't mean that you have consented to anything else.
Exactly. And if you're ever in doubt and you just want to chat about it, phone our helpline. We're very happy to chat through it with you.
And does it expire? Can you come to the police station 6 months later and say, I want to report this thing that happened to me six months ago?
No, there's no moratorium. You can go anytime. Just remember then, of course, you're not going to get the same medical treatment. You won't get access to ARVs. morning after pill, you know, that kind of thing. Mm. The medical treatment then would be different, and there'll be no forensic evidence either, because that's also got to be collected within 72 hours.
So 72 hours is the time, the window period that you have to collect evidence that will make your case stronger if you want to report it. But And if you do go and at the time you get the forensic all collected and stuff, and then you don't want to report it at the time, will they keep it?
Well, if you decide to collect the, you know, if you make the decision that you'll have the evidence collected, I think each unit has their own ideas on how long they would keep the kit for. And I think it's sometimes only a month. So the person would have to check it out with the investigating officer. He or she can advise the survivor around that. You know, it's sometimes it's a just in case. And you can change your mind as well. You're entitled to change your mind and withdraw, because this is your process. It's not anything else. Except, of course, in the case of children, it's very different then.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sure. Thank you very much, Cheryl Lee, for
keeping it real on CliffCentral.com.
For keeping it real with us and chatting with us. Definitely a big topic, and I didn't even realize how big this topic was until I actually started looking at the internet and speaking with people. I think it's going to be a two-show special, this one. So thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, April. You take care.
Sure. Bye.
Bye.
So, sexual harassment in the workplace is another thing that around this time, you're not sure, is this person flirting with me, or is this something that I can charge this person with? But before, I'm going to try and get an HR specialist on the line, a very good friend of mine. She was in a meeting, and I'm hoping her meeting is finished. I came across this little track on the internet, and it was a couple of years ago with a whole lot of stars who were lending their voices to saying that this should not happen to anybody.
It's time to say no more.
So I have got her on the line, and I'm so excited. Very good friend of mine, Tabi, who's an HR specialist. Hello, Tabi.
Hi, for me.
Thank you for coming off out of your meeting to have this conversation. You literally have
pleasure.
You only have 3 minutes, and I was just looking up the movie that you were telling me about with Kerry Washington and Confirmation. Oh my goodness! I have to go check
what
it out.
A stunning movie.
Check it out. But
you
so
must.
It's Valentine's. Everybody has love in the air. Everybody is like flirting and trying out their luck, right? And I'm thinking, in 2017. In the workplace, this is the kind of shit that'll get you in trouble, and that's why I asked you to come on to just, you know, from an HR perspective, what are the thin lines that a girl should never get close to, or should actually recognize that this person has gone beyond flirting with me now? This is actually harassment.
Well, for me, I would firstly say that the advice would then be for both girls and boys, right? So it wouldn't just be girl advice.
Halala.
So I would start by saying that, particularly in a corporate environment, the culture of the organization is very important, where you work and how you work. But as a precursor to the culture, you need to understand your own parameters and other people's parameters. So small things, Pumi, like how you greet somebody, whether you hug or not hug, how you have an engagement with somebody, what conversations you are having, the content of those very social, jovial conversations could lead us down a very narrow path. So I would say that particularly if it's a new environment where you're not maybe sure of the people that you're interacting with, or you don't know those people on a social context, I would say you must keep your parameters clear. Your personal space, for instance, things around hugging people, or gestures around maybe touching them on the shoulder, or touching them on any part of the body, maybe when you're laughing, or instances like that. You should steer clear of things like that, because those kind of gestures and demeanors could very easily be misinterpreted. And it starts for somebody with a smile, and for somebody it's a wink. you know. I could say, I was not comfortable with the way that you looked at me. And the burden of proof always, unfortunately, lies with the person that is being accused of sexual harassment or any inappropriate behavior. So if I'm having a conversation with you and then I find something to say about your top, you know, small things like that could be very easily be misinterpreted.
Sure. The thing about the burden of proof gets me every time you say it. Gets me because it does my head in. Because when you are having a conversation between two people and today I say something about your top, tomorrow I say something about your short skirt, and then 4 months from now something has changed in your life and I say something about that same top. And then you decide today,
Yes. So I know somebody that just one comment, which was said in a very social, jovial context, was then misinterpreted. And it then led down a very bad path for both parties or all the parties that were involved. So my advice would be, steer clear of commenting about people's attires, what they're wearing, what they're not wearing, or what you think they should be wearing. Mm-hmm. I remember one of my first jobs many, many years ago is that I worked in a call center, and you'd find that we would just dress down, you'd have these strappy tops, some of your body would be hanging out.
You do when you're 20-something in a call center.
When you're 21. But I am then saying that even if a person dresses like that, and you feel that you've got the right to comment, be careful of the things that you do and do not say that can be taken out of context. So unless you are maybe in HR where you are giving the person advice on how to dress, so any other comment then can easily be deemed inappropriate. If you then say to somebody, you know that top shows your boobs. So you could be saying genuinely.
I see your nipples.
Yeah, I can see your nipples in that top. That very easily for me can be spun out of control. So I do think that generally a rule of thumb, girl to boy, do not comment on the person's attire or outfit unless if you have that relationship and that is a protected relationship, and vice versa. Boy to girl to boy. Ooh. Do not comment about people's attires or how they look in an outfit unless if you feel that you are in a protected relationship, whether they are your friend, your girlfriend, etc. But any other relationship, just steer clear of any such comments that could easily be misinterpreted.
Yo, 2017, it's so hard out here. It's so hard out here. In 2017, there's so many things that could get you into trouble. And I think at this time of the year in particular, just keep to your damn self. Don't say stuff.
Absolutely.
Don't say stuff. And Tabby, thank you so much for coming on air. Good advice. Good advice for girls and boys. Okay, I think I have to say goodbye because I see Grant on the other side. And before I myself am charged with a sexual misconduct in the workplace, I better leave the studio, vacate the studio. And I'm going to say goodbye to you. Thanks for tuning in to Womandla. And have a safe time. It's Valentine's Day next week. Be safe. One of my favorite songs, which I thought was so ballsy after that whole Rihanna and Chris Brown thing, for Eminem to have her talking about this. CliffCentral.com